Good morning, good morning. Okay, come. Good morning. Good morning, John. Good morning. Is Rafi joining us?
Eventually.
Too busy schmoozing it up, huh?
Yeah. A lot of people to say.
Okay. So let's start with one of my favorite Rashis in Mishpatim, one of my favorite non-halachic Rashis. The Torah has many nicknames. It's referred to, of course, as Sefer Yetzira, Sefer Ha-Geula, it's Sefer of Musar. It fulfills many, many functions. Of course, it's a Sefer of Chukim and Mishpatim. But there's a phrase in Rashi, based on a pasuk in Shmuel, in which the Torah is referred to as a mashal. Which Rashi am I referring to? The Torah describes Utsach B'Shogeg. And the Torah writes, we'll shmuz later. The Torah writes that if a person kills B'Shogeg, Mashal no Sadah ve'elokimi naliyada. So there's a little shout-out in the pasuk that if a person murders B'Shogeg, Hashem choreographed it. Don't think that this is completely random. Elokim in Aliyadah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged it. Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu arrange? We don't live in this world anymore. Our world is much more random. But at least in the perfect world of cause and effect, someone kills B'Shogeg, Hashem's responsible for creating that shidduch between the Ritzach B'Shogeg and the Retzach. So Rashi says, he quotes the general theme of Rashi, is that if this person killed B'Shogeg, he probably had it coming to him. He probably was involved in a previous murder in which he was acquitted on a loophole, and now this is payback, and Gullus is not just kapara, but it's also a bit of an onesh. So don't think this person is scot-free and squeaky clean, and somehow just randomly fell off of his ladder. Kadosh Baruch Hu arranged it that he would have an accounting of some sort, but therefore, l'kim im aliyado, this isn't arbitrary. In order to convey that point, Rashi cites the pasuk in Shmuel Aleph. In Shmuel Aleph, David HaMelech writes, Kasher Yomar Mishol HaKadmoni, just like the original parable used to say, Meir Shaim Yetzer Resha. From evil people, crimes emerge. So that's the pasuk in Shmuel Aleph that Rashi quotes to associate with the pasuk in Mishpatim. The Mishpatim of Kimi and Ali Ado. The real explanation can only be found in Shmuel Aleph. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu associate this crime with this Vetzech B'Shogeg? Because of what David HaMelech says in Shmuel Aleph. So what does it mean, Mashal HaKadmoni? When David HaMelech says, when the Mashal HaKadmoni says, so we think it's like early people, ancients, there's some ideas that are so ingrained in cultures that people have been speaking about it for thousands of years. And therefore, it's like this old adage, this old aphorism that people would say in the caves, or people would say on the Viking ships, that people, Mashal HaKadmoni, the early people would speak. That's not how Rashi interprets the pasuk in Shmuel Aleph. Rashi interprets the pasuk, Mashal HaKadmoni, Torah is a mashal of the Kadmoni. Hashem is the original being. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wrote in his Torah, of course he didn't write Meir Shem Yetzer Rasha, it's David HaMelech, but he wrote Al-Kimin Al-Yadi, which is a coded reference for Meir Shem Yetzer Rasha. So the point is that according to Rashi, one of the nicknames for the Torah is a Mashal. Torah is a Shira, the Torah is a Sefer of Chukim, the Torah is a Sefer of Musar. But something about the Torah means it's a Mashal. Why is the Torah a Mashal? Why would you call the Torah a Mashal? A parable or a fable? Shoma writes Mashal, says, look at the ants and see how the way they conduct an ant colony, and you can extrapolate that to your own lives and see a parable for a human experience. Okay. Understand why the Torah is called a Mashal. We have to understand what a Mashal is. What is a parable or a fable? They're the same thing. I mean, technically, if you're keeping score, a parable is only with humans, and a fable is even with animals in the natural kingdom. A Mashal is based on the following premise. That parallel or systems that seem to be different work in similar fashion. Religious people believe because Hashem created an integrated world. Even if you're non-religious, you feel as if the world feels pretty similar. It's only within systems. If I sense gravity in planets, then I can probably also sense that gravity operating on subatomic particles. And I can, when I look at quantum mechanics, I can feel this gravitational pull between material that I can hardly see. So that's within a world of science, and that's how science operates. But we get the feeling that more or less, if look at science, this can affect human psychology and human sociology. So therefore, in the 21st century, we're all products of Darwin. Darwin didn't really discuss you and me, he discussed animals in the Galapagos Islands. But survival of the fittest and the great chain of being. So we'll influence that somehow. If we feel there's an evolutionary engine to this world, then we're also evolutionary. When Einstein spoke about relativity and that planets have a relative mass, so somehow that created a world in which we are better able to appreciate relative truth rather than objective truth. So we get a sense that what's happening in every field mirrors itself, and that's the premise of every fable. So, for example, what's the most famous fable? Anyone know? What?
Tortoise in the hare.
Okay, it's a good one. Probably the most famous one is Aesop's fable, sour grapes. What's the fable? Fox wants the grapes, can't reach the grapes, but says, you know what, the grapes probably sour anyway. No real loss there. So why does that apply? Because sometimes we aspire to things in life and we fail. So it's hard to confront our failure. The easiest way to confront our failure is to create upholstery. It's kind of like a little padding and cushioning. Well, we didn't really want it anyway. It wasn't a big deal. We get the sense that the same attitudes that govern the fox in the field and the grapes govern us. That's the basic premise of a mashal, the cross link. Now, Torah is the ultimate mashal, because every part of reality can be sensed in Torah. So anytime you study Torah, every detail of Torah, you say, oh, what does this teach me about? How can I extrapolate it about? So basically, calling Torah a mashal essentially creates the reality that Torah is the source for every part of, because all of reality comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Torah is the greatest condensation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will. So by definition, tautologically, anytime, you have to really know Torah well. So we're learning Gittin now. We're learning the halacha. I don't know, I'm teaching my shir today. The halacha is putting again to a woman's chatzer or to an eved. I hope that no one's going to really extrapolate that directly. Well, one day when I divorce chatzer, I'm going to divorce to teach me about space and human beings in a chatzer and my relation to space and my relation to processes. And how can this teach me about chemistry and physics and far, far beyond. You have to know Torah really well. You have to lump together 25 sigurs of chatzer and then start to understand how I relate to my chatzer. It's my chatzer, your chatzer. But you have to have this belief that in every pine needle of Torah, you've got the secrets of the universe and the secrets of all reality. And therefore, it's not just a mashal, it's the ultimate mashal. Because it teaches us not just about the times we fail in life and the fox and the grapes, but it teaches us about all of reality. So it's a really interesting Rashi, in which he refers to Torah as the mashal hakadmoni, based on the pasuk in Shmuel. Okay. Another interesting Rashi. The Rashi about... let's talk about the Rashi. Probably... the most famous phrase that Rashi creates, Rashi, Asher Tassim Lefneim, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe, Asher Tassim Lefneim, that's a strange introduction, V'edabra Hashem Moshe Lamar, and Lamar implicitly says, convey it. Was it Elim Shvatim Asher Tassim Lefneim? In other words, tell him, do it's B'nai Yisrael, Asher Tadabril B'nai Yisrael, Asher Tetzavu is B'nai Yisrael. What is Tassim Lefneim? So Rashi feels that this, since this is the beginning of the Masara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is instructing Moshe, you have to teach him really well. Don't just teach them lightly and generally, in basic generalities, but teach them in a very, very organized fashion. Right? Talked a lot about the yeshiva. I think the yeshiva does a really good job in training people to be pedagogically sound. Rav Lichtenstein was very, very rigorous as a pedagogue. There was a beginning, there was a middle, there was an end, there were three summaries, three intermediate summaries after each, but a sense that you can't just pour out information. Information has to be organized and has to be... systematized and schematized. And what does Rashi say? How should you... what's the mashal? Asher tosim lefnehem kishulchan ha'arach. As a table is all set and ready to be eaten. Oh. That phrase, kishulchan arach, was very iconic for a certain person who lived in Tzfat in the 16th century who was writing a sefer. He got it from this Rashi. That the paradigm of clarity is an organized table, because when we sit and eat, we don't just want to throw food on the table. There's a sequence, where you sit, how you sit, when you eat, how you eat. There's a system to it. So Yosef Karo named his sefer, Shulchan Aruch, when he read. At some point he was reading parts of the Mishpatim, at some point he was reading this. Again, he probably knew Rashi well enough that he was always jostling and ricocheting in his head. He said, I'm going to call my sefer. Really, he didn't call his sefer Shulchan Aruch, he called his primary sefer the Beis Yosef, because his name was Yotzef, and it was more about Parshas Vayigash than about Parshas Mishpatim, because he felt like he was going to supply halachic knowledge for the whole world, like Yosef provided food for the whole world. And then at the end of his life, in the 1550s, he said, that didn't work too well, because as great as my Sefer, he didn't say it like that, but as great as my Sefer was, people just had a hard time reading the Beis Yosef, because it was just so hard for some people. So he said, I'll write cliff notes, just in case they need a little bit of help. So his cliff notes were the Shulchan Aruch, and the cliff notes became the magnum opus, became the primary work. And this was the ultimate image of something that's organized. And the Shulchan has a highly high degree of organization because of the shelves and the rods and the breads and the systems. It's not just the way we set our table, but the way the table was set in the base of the Mikdash, as opposed to some of the other korbanos, which also have systemization and regulation and regimentation, but somehow the structure is not as multi-component. Like the Shulchan has a lot of components to it. Whereas the menorah is the opposite. The menorah is miksha. There is one unified. It's hard to create disorder in the menorah because it's all one piece. There in the Shulchan, the rods could be put in this way, and the shelves could be placed in that way, and they could be higher or lower. The menorah is very little wiggle room, literally. You can't really wiggle the menorah. Saki Shulchan Aruch. In the Yom Shul Shlomo, of course, or Shlomo Luria, one of his primary opponents, says, you can't systematize Torah. It's wild. It's chaotic. Every sugya has to be read afresh and anew by each person in their generation contemporarily. You can't create a system for Pesach. Torah can't be pigeonholed. It's not something that can be set up like some food on a table. So Shlomo Luria, who lived in Lublin in the 16th century, who was one of the arch opponents of the Shulchan Aruch about this issue, named his sefer, since his name was Shlomo, Yom Shul Shlomo, which was Shlomo's huge mikvah in the base of Mikdash, which was so huge that people just saw it like an ocean. And he says, Torah is not a table, Torah is an ocean. Is Torah a table? Is Torah an ocean? A little of each. And Baruch Hashem, you want to be pedagogically sound. You want to explain. You want to brisker derech. You want to... On the other hand, it's untamed and it's chaotic. As much as you conquer, it will always be unconquerable and untamed. And so HaKadosh Baruch was telling Moshe, at least at this point, you spend 40 days on Har Sinai seeing the infinite sweep of Torah above the mountain. You know, these are people. They need... Give them a bite-sized element. Just teach it to them. Kishulchan Aruch. It's not just the organization that HaKadosh Baruch Hu demands of Moshe. If you read Rashi carefully, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, Lo tala adait chalom eshlem aperek v'alacha bezol gimu pami mat shetei stir b'fiyem kimishnasa. I'll just teach it to them once or twice. Hashem says, no. Asher tasim lefnehem. Okay. Rashi says that Moshe had two thoughts. One thought was, I'll just teach it to them once or twice. The other thought, Moshe says, V'eini matriach atzmi lahavinam tamei hadavor perusha. Not only will I teach it to them once or twice, Moshe says, but I won't explain the reasons. They'll trust me. I'll just tell them the ideas, the halachos, the conclusions, not the perushim. Hashem says no and no. The real way to teach is, A, of course, it's got to be organized and systematized, but also you have to repeat yourself. Things that to you are obvious are not so obvious to others. They're on the learning curve. They're first understanding things. So you're playing the song in your head because you've read and thought about this. How many hours have I thought about Kinyan Chatzar? How many hours have I thought about, I don't know, this Rashi or whatever else I'm teaching? But when people are listening, it's maybe the first time or the second time. So you have to repeat yourself and let it time, give it time to settle for people to digest. You can't just say an idea. You say some of the greatest teachers that I've had, not that many ideas, but it's just they're saying it in different ways, and I'm digesting it. I'm seeing it from different angles, different metaphors. It's in really Reb Blumenzweig in Yerucham. I like hearing him speak. I'll sit there in front of a medrash, at Shal Shudas time, and Yerucham speak for an hour. It doesn't really introduce that many ideas, new sources. Not just source. It's a source, and it marinates, and it trickles down to your subconscious, and you think about what it means. And it's an important, don't say just once or twice. And what do you mean? I said it twice. They got the idea. They got the concept. I say it a third time, the fourth time. It just says, it's a question of internalizing an idea, but making it part of your subconscious, not part of your cognitive. But second of all, tell them why. Tell them why these halachas. I think that for a lot of boys coming to yeshiva in general is really shifting from blind, robotic performance into, oh, now I know why this halacha makes sense. Now I know why Judaism works. It's not just magic mechanics and pressing this lever and that lever and this button and that button and following what the rabbis say, but there's a ration to it. I'm saying, I know people in Mitzrayim are going to be fathers now, and you're ready, it's about to be in Mitzrayim one day. So you have to keep that in mind. Just because you said an idea in the past doesn't mean people understand it. You have to repeat it again, maybe not necessarily the same moment, but go back to the same ideas. It's not always new ideas, but repeating the same core ideas. Second of all, try to explain why things happen, why things make sense, because the sooner people are able to associate it with a reason, then it's logical. Once it's logical, then it can adhere to the logical spaces in our mind and in our experience, rather than just say, okay, my life is logical, and then religion is just some other sphere and other realm. It doesn't really make sense to me, but I've got to keep it because my father was religious and come from a religious background. Also, it's if anything, it's supremely logical and supremely, even the illogical parts are logical because it's logical to assume that Hashem can't be understood. So that's logical. We can't understand the Torah. Why would you think you could understand the whole Torah? It would be illogical to assume it's completely logical. It's completely logical to assume some of it is illogical. But at least get into that space, into that conversation. So two very interesting Rashis. One is a Torah called a Mashal. Anyone once maybe Fishal was one of the greatest modern mashal givers was Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim used to tell a lot of parables. I never really understood it when I was, I have to be honest, for many, many years. Like, what's the power of a parable? Like, who cares when you tell me a story or someone else? Parable creates an assumption that the world is consistent and you can understand more about yourself by studying from a distant third-person perspective, the ants or the animals or the Gentiles or the other systems, because those systems will inevitably affect you. And the second part is, and I have the sefer, Kol Mishali Chafetz Chaim. I got it like for some contest in camp or something 1,000 years ago. Like the best learner in the group, they got like Mishali. What do I need this book? I put it on my shelf. But Mishali Chafetz Chaim, so it's interesting to go back and read some of the parables. But the Torah is the ultimate parable. And second of all, Kishulchan Aruch, which is an iconic word, which today when you say the word Shulchan Aruch, you never know it comes from Rashi. Rashi lived before the Shulchan Aruch. And really, Rashi gets some credit for the phrase Kishulchan Aruch. And Rashi says A, repetition, and B, explanation. Okay, Shabbat Shalom. Good morning, Rav. Good morning.